I'm sure you all very well know, Michael, they're out in the trenches on their own. They're responsible for themselves, but they're also responsible for other individuals in teams, which means that actually they don't necessarily have the time to think about their finances in great detail because they spend so much time focusing on the business.
Welcome to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8 figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. If you want to scale fast, target a 7 figure exit and enjoy the process, then keep listening. Do you want to grow your business bigger and faster? A free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find missed golden opportunities. I generally charge $150 or more per hour, but this would be free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing a few thousand dollars a month in sales already. Just visit myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit, and book in a time. That's myamazonaudit.com. Look forward to speaking to you on your audit. Ladles and jelly spoons, boys and girls, welcome back to the 10K Collective podcast for 6, 7 and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers, part of the amazing FBA podcast family. Today, we are talking about preserving your wealth. It's not just about running a business, but in the end, you need to get and keep some wealth for yourself. And that's the topic of the day. We're talking with Henry Okozie from Fortress Wealth Management. He's a financial planner who works with SME business owners to secure their financial future. So Henry, first of all, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you very much for having me, Michael. It's great to be here.
So you're talking to us from London. I'm assuming the city of London. Where is it that you're based exactly, Henry? And tell us a little bit about yourself first.
Yes, you are correct, Michael. And if I could start off by saying, great dress sense. It's good to see a bit of matching there.
Thanks, Henry. Yes, we're both very extremely similar outfits. We went full British on each other. So topic of the day is wealth management. So why is that even a thing for small business owners? That sounds like something I'd associate with high net worth individuals, but the rest of us are just running our businesses and we can think about that later. So why does this matter?
Wealth management ultimately matters, Mike, because it's really important that the resource that you work very hard to earn and to gather is going to create the life and the lifestyle that you want now and into the medium and long term as well. So ultimately, as long as there is a good connection between who you are as a person, your finances, and the life that you want to lead, then you can have as much autonomy and much certainty as possible around your future life. So that's why it's very, very important.
Yeah, it does make sense. And actually, the shocking thing that I see, and this is one reason when you approached me that I thought you were a good person to have on the podcast, a good topic, is that an awful lot of people get obsessed with revenue of their business. That's terrible because that's not real. It's not theirs. It goes through the system. They sometimes are very intelligent, like hyper level, look at profit of their business. But that still isn't their personal money, is it? So it always strikes me that people obsess about the business. And so you should when you're building one. But eventually, you've got to look at your own money that you get back out of it. So what are the problems that you see with business owners when it comes to their own wealth, their personal wealth, as distinct from the value of their business?
I would start that by expanding on what you've just mentioned, Michael. I think a lot of business owners can get obsessed with profit and growth and scaling, which is all well and good and is, of course, very important. But what do you do once you have it? How do you extract it in a way that's efficient? How do you put it in the right homes that are actually going to be used for yourself, for your family, for any other people that are close to you? And these are the things that I see often when I sit down with my clients that are overlooked. It's definitely a gap between what business owners should know and what they do know. I think there is a gap in terms of general financial knowledge and literacy amongst business owners. And all of that comes firstly because they don't have the time to actually to get up to speed and stay up to speed with the changes and the complexities that are ever increasing when it comes to finances. And lastly, business owners, as I'm sure you all very well know, Michael, they're out in the trenches on their own. They're responsible for themselves, but they're also responsible for other individuals and teams, which means that actually they don't necessarily have the time to think about their finances in great detail because they spend so much time focusing on the business. And they also may not know people unless you're someone that knows someone that can help you with your wealth, with your money. You may not know where to turn in the same way that you go to friends for recommendations on restaurants, or you may recommend a barber and all of these sorts of things. If you don't know someone, where do you turn? They're the key issues that I see day in, day out.
Yeah, I think you make an extremely good point when a responsible business owner, it is kind of responsible to put the team first. There's a book, isn't it? Leaders Eat Last. And there is something in that. But I think sometimes leaders don't eat at all. The tragedy, sometimes you see somebody works super hard to run a business. Their employees make money from it. Certainly the suppliers get rich from them. Amazon takes his cut, or whichever platform they're on, Google Ads, wherever you are, if you sell direct to consumer, then Shopify is taking it. But then they don't ever get paid. And I find that a bit tragic. So like the fact that you're refocusing on that. So before we go any further, we've got to hear a little bit about you, Henry. I introduced you, but I didn't really give you a chance to tell us anything about yourself. So what's your background? What brings you to this point?
So I've always had a really strong interest in business, finances, and numbers, certainly from secondary school all the way up to now, which looking back seems an awfully long time ago. And I've always liked, and I think been relatively good at engaging with people, combining those two things together. This is one of those great professions that allows you to address your technical capabilities, but really help people to look after themselves, look after their families, and create the lives that they want. So naturally, financial advice was one of the areas that I explored when I did leave school. I did a previous very, very small stint in sales, i.e. hand sellotape to the phones and dialing for 300, 400 times a day, which is great training. And of course, when you move from something like that, where you're, let's say, speaking to people that are not necessarily very happy to speak to you, to a profession like this, where clients do want to speak to you and they need your advice, it's fantastic. So I've been doing this, and I've been in the industry for around a decade now, and work primarily with, as you mentioned, with SME and business owners. Also a very keen golfer. When I say keen, I mean I like doing it. Doesn't necessarily mean that I'm great at it. Just wanted to caveat.
Yeah, that's fine. We won't put you on the podcast as a professional golfer.
Please don't.
Yeah. But golf, that's one of those cliche things that, as well as like wearing the suit, you have to wear, play golf in Britain. So for the Americans listening, I don't know, it's probably the same there, isn't it? But to network with the right people. Yeah. Okay. So, and tell us a tiny bit about Fortress Wealth Management as well. Who are they? Just to make sure that we know who we're talking with.
Absolutely. So Fortress Wealth Partnership, they are a partner practice of St. James's Place, which is the leading wealth management in the UK. We are located in the city, in Bank, central London. So we serve that wider community throughout London, but we also serve employees and business owners in the surrounding home counties and across the UK as well.
Great. That's good to know. And yes, St. James's Place, a very big name in wealth management. So that's reassuring to know the source of the information. Okay. So getting back to the small business owners. Okay. So we've identified they don't really have a plan to create the lifestyle they want. A lot of places, I think they just assume it will happen, right? And I think that's a dangerous assumption from what I've seen in some cases. They're obsessing over growth, profit, and scaling. So they're looking after the business, looking after the team, so they should, but they're not looking after themselves. So that's the problem. So how do we go about creating a solution here?
I think the best place to start with regards to creating a solution is actually thinking about what that issue is and what the immediate steps that can be done to actually bridge that gap for business owners. I think the first thing, they have business plans. Of course they do when they start a business and as the journey of that business is ongoing. But do they have a life plan that is aligned with, I think the first thing to address and that we always look to address with our business owners is what is your why and what is the life that you actually want to lead? And once you have a good understanding of that, you can then start to uncover those sorts of conversations, i.e. you want the business to be X million turnover, for example. Okay, why? Once you've achieved that, what happens next? What do you want life to look like? So I think really it's about just having those conversations and making those conversations more normal and front of mind. We're British, we tend not to be very good at having those uncomfortable conversations because they may delve into things that are unknown or things that, let's say, create a bit of angst and uncertainty. But I think actually by breaking down those barriers and making the uncomfortable conversations more of the norm, it will mean that actually business owners and anyone who's, you know, serious about their finances and building out a real solid plan, they'll be far more comfortable to have those conversations.
Yeah, it's interesting. The willingness to have uncomfortable conversations seems to be one of those big differentiators between people who succeed and don't succeed in life, doesn't it? So once again, that comes up. And yeah, as you say, Brits don't really like to do that. I mean, Brits do talk about money, obviously, in business context, but they are a little bit wary. And I suppose some wealthy Americans seem to be the same, that they're wary that they're going to get shot down. So you have to have a safe space in which to be able to talk about money, particularly these days with the cost of living crisis. If you are doing well, or at least you're trying to, that can be seen as a sort of red flag to be attacked on social media, can't it? So a space where you can be willing to be uncomfortable, which is an internal issue, and feel safe externally seems very important. So now you raised a couple of things I want to delve into. So first of all, people that you said, they probably have a business plan. I would say that quite a shocking number of people don't really have a business plan, that they have a business that's growing. They have a sort of generic, turnover is X, let's try and add 50% to that next year. So it's often very turnover centered. And do you find that's the case? And does that, how does that, when you have these first conversations, let me ask a better question. When you have these first conversations, what are the sort of first starting points for most business owners? Where are they actually starting from in your experience?
That's a great question, Mark, a really good question. We always like to start with, where are you right now in terms of the subjective things? So how do you feel about your position? Are you comfortable? Are you a little bit uncertain? Are you worried? Or are you optimistic? All of these sorts of things, which actually really uncover a lot more than business owner expects to in those initial conversations, because it's a great way, firstly, of them thinking about things at a deeper level. They get to understand what their true drivers are and their true values are. And that really allows them to move forward and build a plan and start thinking about the habits that they need to implement to move them and their business forward, essentially. So we always look to start with things of that nature. We then look to build, I suppose, more of a methodical approach to that in terms of short, medium, and long term. Where do you want to be over each of those time frames from a personal point of view, firstly, and then from a business point of view as well? So going back to your point, Michael, around business owners thinking, let's just scale to 50%, or we want to increase profit by X, without really knowing why it's that number or what that number actually means, but having a better understanding of a specific number and what that will mean for the business owner, their family, their lifestyle, it means that they can then actually implement and strategize in a much more deliberate and focused way. And I think actually, when you have a target that you're tracking towards and it means something to you, and that actually hitting that is going to have a direct and specific impact on you, it makes business much more, firstly, enjoyable, certainly much more fruit for the business owner as well.
Yeah, I like this a lot. So a couple of thoughts. I mean, first of all, you said earlier, you talk to your business owners and say, well, what's your plan? And they'll say, business at, say, 10 million turnover. And you say, why? And this is an excellent question, because people are so busy targeting turnover because they get caught in this sort of sport of business. And I think that's great, day to day, month to month, year to year even. But if you look over the course of a decade, playing the game to have the biggest number to be able to brag about in some mastermind meeting or probably the conference over the beers doesn't make any difference to your lifestyle. The other thing that strikes me is you say what it will mean for your business, your family. I think one of the biggest tricky conversations that I see business owners having, and I've had them, is with your wife or significant other or family, and to justify the amount of time and effort you're pouring into a business. And if you have a particular outcome that they can get, that suddenly changes that conversation, doesn't it? And I think most people aren't willing to have those conversations on a very concrete basis. They go, well, look, it's going quite well. Look at the numbers. And they're giving them numbers that don't mean anything because revenue doesn't buy you a house. Okay, so you said that you've got to set a specific target that means something, and so we've got to get a plan to get that. So how do we start to formulate a plan for that?
So there are two ways that that can be adopted and addressed, Michael. First way is building from the ground up, or front loading, shall we say, which is where you say, where do I want to be at a specific date or a specific moment in time? And then thinking about the things that you need to do now from a business point of view to ensure that you've got the resource that can then be allocated to those objectives that you thought. So that's really forward thinking and then moving and making decisions as the business moves. There is the flip side to that, which can be working backwards, where you're a business owner that's already done well. You've already accumulated healthy levels of resource. And perhaps you haven't been as optimal or as strategic as you could have been up until that point. So that's really about saying, right, we've got healthy resource here, but we need to be giving more care and more attention to it. And is our resource in the right home? So you're thinking, actually, what do we have? Is it being optimized? And what does it actually mean for me? So they're the two approaches that we typically see, and that I certainly see when I sit down with clients. It's either looking forward and building as the business builds, or actually utilizing business as an asset at that moment in time once it's already in a great position.
Okay. And so I just reflecting on the people that I know that I've worked with over the years. And I think that most people are in the front loading, you know, looking forwards situation. Mm. Although I do know some successful owners who really should be looking at their resource allocation a bit better, or asset allocation, perhaps, because a lot of it's tied up in the business, of course. And if the business fails, which nobody wants to think, and you shouldn't probably focus on that as an entrepreneur, but you should have an insurance policy that if the business fails, you still keep your house, number one. And number two, you should have some kind of outcome for the 30 years, in some cases, of work you've done on your business. So let's talk, however, about the front loading one. So where do you want to be by a specific date, and create a plan to get there? It sounds so sort of seductively easy. What are the things that prevent people getting there, or the issues that come up?
There are a couple of things in that area, Michael. I think one of the first ones is some internal hurdles and some biases that may be preventing the business owner from making a decision or from implementing a certain thing. This may be sensitivity to previous events. If you think about dot-com crashes and more recently the COVIDs of the world, these sort of events and happenings can make business owners a little bit more reserved and conservative in how they approach future. So that's one of those things. The second thing can just be lack of knowledge and lack of understanding around what is the most effective thing to do and what is the best thing to do. If you think about financial advice or wealth management as a whole, you have the professionals in the form of financial advisors, but then you have news, you have the influencers of the new world, celebrities and influencers who are promoting certain things from a financial perspective, which, if I'm being honest, creates a bit of a minefield. Now, when you put so much data and so much information, and one person saying A, one person saying B is the best thing to do, where do you start? And if you don't know, how could you possibly make a confident decision on what's the best thing to do? So that's certainly another hurdle. And the third key thing, the third core thing that I see is just not really knowing where to start and not having a good reference point to actually base any decisions off of. As I mentioned, if you're running a business, you're responsible for individuals, you're responsible for teams, you're thinking about stock, inventory, marketing, all of these things. Actually, a lot of the time, planning individual finances can fall way down the pecking order and can be at the bottom of a very, very long list, as I've certainly seen in my experience, which again, is another reason for people not actually starting. I mean, when I sit down sometimes, I speak to business owners who have been thinking about their finances for 5 years, 10 years, and they've just never got around to it for some of those reasons.
Yes, I can see that. I mean, there is so much that comes at you as a small business owner. So I guess if nothing else, if today's podcast it gives people a dig in the ribs to go, or make that time to think about it, then that's provided a value in itself. So, however, let's dig into this a little bit more. So we've got a few things here. We talked about, I guess one of the things we're implying, if we're talking about planning for the future, is some kind of pension planning, right? And that always assumes that you're in your dotage and you can't work anymore. But actually, if you've done it successfully, you should be able to retire with plenty of life and vigor left, right? So that's one thing. And the other one is, you mentioned extracting profits efficiently. So let's talk about these things. First of all, tell me about pension planning. It doesn't sound like a very sexy topic somehow, but I guess if it means you can do the passive income thing, do what you want, be on the golf course. I'm just looking out the window. It's raining here today. So maybe you might choose to fly over to Florida to be in a golf course or somewhere sunnier, or live in the Maldives or whatever. Yeah. So wherever you want to do it, how do we go about that? How do we set that up in an intelligent way?
So you're right, Michael. The word pension and pension planning is not the sexiest topic in the world. However, ideal retirement planning or family retirement planning is more interesting and is far more sexy, as you've put it. So thinking about things in that way is a great way of creating more of an emotional connection and a real driver to explore these sorts of avenues. Now, pensions are one of the most tax efficient vehicles in the UK in line with current legislation, but it doesn't mean that they're right for everyone. Any sort of investment or any vehicle must be considered in an individual capacity, as it may be right for one person and not right for the other. But for the most part, certainly as a business owner, they can present some fantastic opportunity. The first of them is it gives you an asset that is diversified and is slightly different to your business. Now, something that I hear all the time is my business is my pension, or my business is my retirement. And for most business owners, it is. But in saying that, you're relying on your business being in its best condition and absolutely optimal at a specific moment in time. That doesn't consider where the market is right now, what the health of that business is at that specific moment in time, and also what's happening economically. Right? So a pension can act as something that it helps to smoothen out and diversify that risk a little bit, because you have another asset complementing your business that is also working hard in the background to create future value for you.
Do you want to grow your Amazon business bigger or faster? I bet you do. If so, a free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find some golden missed opportunities. Generally, I charge at least $150 an hour these days for my time, but this is free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing at least a few thousand dollars a month in sales. If you are, just go to myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit and book in a time, and we'll see each other on a Zoom call. That's myamazonaudit.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you on a call soon. Yeah, so one of the saddest things that I hear from some people, and even, you know, it's a bit lazy to reference Tony Robbins somehow in a wealth thing, but Tony Robbins mentions a friend of his who ran one of the big hotels in Las Vegas, and he did exactly what you said. He said, well, my business is my pension. Well, more than that, he was a billionaire. I think a couple of billion dollars he was worth. And of course, because he didn't put his assets into a diversified bundle of things, he lost everything. And if he merely put, say, 10% of his wealth into something very unexciting, like some publicly traded companies that weren't going to go to zero, then he would have still been worth a mere $100 million or something. And you can probably live on that even in Las Vegas. So it's an extremely, a very extreme example that makes the point very well. And so I wouldn't, if nothing else, again, like if somebody is willing to take a percentage out and put it somewhere else, then I think that really de-risks their entire life, which is different from their business, which is news to some business owners, right? Their business is their life. Okay, so pensions and retirement. So tell me a little bit more. I know you're in a very regulated industry, Henry. So if I ask you a question, you're not supposed to answer it, then just tell me. But other than that, let's dig into some of this. So tax-efficient vehicles, we don't need to get into all the details of the UK tax code, but what sort of ways could we invest? Give me a concrete example. Let's say we've got somebody who's got a business that's doing £5 million a year revenue. It's a 20% profit margin. So how do you even begin to assess how much money you can take out of that? What are the sort of numbers you go through there?
So we always start with ensuring that the lights can stay on, that the business can continue to operate. So if a business is sitting on capital or surplus capital, first thing we want to ensure is that there is that safety net and that emergency buffer that will ensure that the business can continue to operate on a day-to-day basis. Once that's been identified, once that's been earmarked, you can then start to have the more exciting conversations around, right, can we make some of the resource and some of the monies within our business work a bit harder? Can we find other homes and other environments that could create a bit more value than what they're currently getting? And as I mentioned earlier, Michael, it's really about matching it to that specific individual and that specific business. So the first port of call is thinking, what type of vehicle or what type of investment is actually most suitable to the individual, to the business in question? If we've got a business that is capital intensive, you may think about more of a staggered approach to investing or utilizing vehicles. Or if you have a business that actually doesn't require much operating capital and is cash rich, for example, you may think about making more of an immediate and deliberate approach to utilizing some of that resource, which filters into different vehicles that are based on investment timeframe, flexibility of access, a jurisdiction for a lot of businesses as well. But the first port of call is making sure that the day-to-day is covered and that we've then got capacity and scope to think about creating more value moving forward.
Okay, so that makes sense. So if you've got a capital-intensive vehicle, you need a staggered approach. I guess that's going to be true for pretty much anyone in e-commerce who's got a lot of capital tied up in stock or inventory at any given time. So how do we use a staggered approach then? That's probably the most relevant one to our listeners.
So a staggered approach, for example, Michael, could be thinking about making investments or utilizing contributions or reallocating capital on a monthly basis or on a quarterly basis. Now, all that does is firstly ensures that there is as much of a safety net or a buffer at any moment in time for any changes that the business may go through. But it also ensures that actually the funds are buying in at different parts of the market. And that should ensure for a smoother approach. If you think about buying a house on one day or going to buy a house, not buying it, and then a week later, its price has decreased by 10%. You're buying that one asset at that moment in time. Whereas with a staggered approach to business, investing and financial planning, you're ensuring that you've got a bit more protection against the ups and downs of the economy and the market. When it comes to those businesses that are planning over the long term, having a smoother approach is far more efficient for them.
Yeah, I think it's called pound cost averaging, isn't it? Or dollar cost averaging in stock market investing. I was going to say, any physical property or real estate that goes down 10% in a month is in a pretty volatile state. But I know in the markets that's quite standard for stocks and shares in some cases. So, okay, fine. So it sounds like putting some money aside, effectively your business is saving for a pension monthly, What sort of, you talk about investment vehicles, like they're these mysterious things. Can you give us some concrete examples, again, within the regulations you're allowed to say, of the sorts of investment vehicles we're talking about here?
Yes, certainly. So from a business point of view, a business slash individual point of view, you have something like a pension or a pension fund. There are, of course, some rules and some terms around when you can access it and how you can access it. Pension is a great way of getting funds out of the business's name and into the individual's name if you're a business owner, and also doing it in a tax-efficient way. For most businesses, generally speaking, a pension contribution is a deductible expense from that business's top line. So it's a great way of getting money into your own name, reducing any potential corporation tax liability at the same time. And then off of the back of that, you've now got an asset that can grow for you towards your future. Another type of investment can be a general investment account or something that's called a unit trust, which is again, a general investment account. And what that does is it allows business owners and individuals to put some of their excess or surplus capital to harder work over the short, the medium, and the long term. So if you imagine a business has some capital that they don't envisage needing 5 years, for example, or they've already got a number of years of capital allocated and the provisions in place for, instead of having it on deposit, earning maybe not an exciting level of interest, although interest rates have certainly over the last couple of years, you're putting it in an environment where you're buying into some assets that are designed to generate capital growth that later on can then be reaccessed and utilized for the business, and hopefully with a return on top. So those sorts of things are a great way, again, getting money out of the business in a tax efficient way and getting them into an environment where they can continue to grow. And of course, shelter them from tax, depending on that type of vehicle.
Yeah. And again, this is deep waters, but tax efficiency planning is again, it doesn't sound sexy, but anything that protects you from the government's rapacious attack on your wealth, that sounds a bit harsh, but that's what it feels like sometimes. It's got to be a good thing. So the fact that you can do some of these things in a really tax efficient way, i.e. you can put it as an expense rather than something that's going to be taxed, is really, really helpful. So tell me about insurance. We've got this on the list here. That's probably one of the words that's even less sexy than pension. Is the purpose of insurance purely just to, as the word implies, insure against bad things happening, or has it got a wider function in wealth planning?
Yes, it does, Michael. And again, I think one of the most important things is to break it down into something that is really more relevant. It's not just insurance against the worst happening. It's protection that can allow you as a business owner to be as ambitious as you want to be, take on the projects that you want to, and grow the business and grow the team that ultimately serves your purpose and your values best. So if you think about insurance generally, and the types of insurance that we're talking about when it comes to business owners, like key person, for example, what happens if something were to happen to someone that is a big contributory factor to your business's profits? You want to ensure that you have a business that won't completely disappear overnight should something like this happen. You want a business that has contingency should something like that happen to a business owner or a key player. So insurance really is not just about thinking about the worst, but it's about saying, how do we ensure that we've got the strongest foundations in place so that our business can go and thrive, and that I can be as ambitious as I want to be as a business owner, and that I can take on the projects that I want to take on because I know that I've got protection in place.
Yeah, I like it. That's a sort of intelligent person's way of being ambitious without sort of just doing it in a mindless way. So a lot of people say, they have this, the phrase goes around in entrepreneur circles, no plan B, as if that's a good thing. I mean, for me, that sounds very amateur. If somebody says, I've got no plan B, I think, well, that just implies that you're denying reality that business could fail. But instead of just being sitting around worrying about that. You put something in place and then you get on with it. It's like we don't stop driving. We have car insurance and we have seatbelts, and then we get in the car and get on with it. And so I think that's a very intelligent way of looking at things. Well, look, there's lots of detail that obviously you go into. And one thing that strikes me is that it keeps coming up as a theme is that everything's got to be geared to the individual. And so there's a limit to how much we can help people with general advice, although very interesting and thought provoking. So what services do you offer to anyone who's a small business owner who wants to look into protecting or developing their own wealth? How do you help them?
So I help business owners across the entire financial services remit. Now, it can be from something as simple to managing budgeting, managing cash flow, and ensuring that they're as optimal as possible from an operational point of view. And it can be something as complex as gearing them up financially for the perfect exit and the most optimal exit. So anything in between those two things, I can cover. All of it is underpinned by lifestyle financial planning. So going back to what I mentioned towards the start of this podcast, like really creating as much alignment between the business owner, and their personal values. I think what's something that people want is they want a plan that is bespoke to them and resonates with them specifically. Otherwise, it's not exciting. It's much harder to stick to. And also, once they get to the end of their business journey, if they've been following a plan that actually doesn't resonate with them, it's not going to be very rewarding at the end. So all of those things are built into the conversations that I have with my clients. And of course, that then filters into the different areas, such as planning for retirement, managing your cash in an optimal and effective way, planning for that exit, planning for children's tuition and education, and all of those sorts of things that, again, are the life events that follow and that are important to people. So they're the main remits that I cover when I work with and when I sit down business owners. But of course, it looks different from person to person.
Great. Well, that's very interesting. It's quite a really broad remit. And it does strike me that managing cash flow and budget for your business is something that you probably should be working with an accountant, or even a fractional CFO these days. So fractional chief financial officer or financial director. But that's different from managing your own personal cash flow and budget, which is something that mostly gets just left to default, isn't it? So that's an interesting, different take on a familiar topic. So if people want to explore this, Henry, how do they get in touch with you? Or what's the next step?
You are more than welcome to contact me via LinkedIn. I'm sure Michael will share my email address, my contact number as well, should you have any questions or have any topics that you wanted to reach out and inquire with me. So they're the main areas. And of course, you're able to do so via Fortress Wealth Partnerships website, which will be in the details as well.
We'll definitely put that on the show notes, which were over at 10kcollective.com, folks, if you're listening. But just to enable, because this is a podcast, could you just give us the email address and the URL for the Fortress Wealth Management?
I can do that. Yes. So my contact details, email address is h.okosi, which is spelled OKOSI, sjpp.co.uk. My personal line is 07903 803 541. And Fortress's site is fortresswealthpartnership.com.
Okay. I'm just thinking I might put a little redirect on there because there's a lot of things to remember. But anyway, we'll put the details on the website, folks. So if you go to 10kcollective.com and look in the show notes there and Henry Okosi, Fortress Wealth Management, then that's going to be there. Well, look, it just remains for me to say a couple of things. First of all, is there any question, Henry, that I should have asked you that I didn't? What would that be?
That is a good question. I would say if there was a question that you could have asked that perhaps we didn't cover today, perhaps why I got into wealth management and why I believe that wealth management is an important topic to discuss and to continue to prosper, certainly in the UK landscape. I think certainly over the last 5 to 10 years, there have been an awful lot of changes and an awful lot of hurdles for business owners come in terms of had COVID, obviously had wars in Ukraine, which have affected supply chain, demand, and all of these sorts of things. And ultimately, that can create a bit of uncertainty around the future. I think wealth management is firstly a great way of coming in tune with who you are and where you want to go. But it can also be used to create more confidence on the future. And from my side, the more business owners are confident in their position, the more business owners that have a really deep meaning and a strong driver towards their future, ultimately the better the economy should be. Business can be done in a more healthy and ethical way. And that way more people are actually living the life that they want to lead, as opposed to a life that they are somewhat being forced into leaving by certain circumstances, I would say.
Yeah, I like it. And having confidence and operating with confidence is so critical, isn't it? Especially in business. And as you say, entrepreneurs create so much added value. And one of the statistics that always blows my mind is that I think of all the jobs created, I think 90% created by small businesses in any given year. I mean, really are the drivers, not so much the drivers of the wider economy, but the drivers of the local economy and everyday life. It's a force for good. And so, yeah, I like that a lot. It's good, very positive feeling on which we can end here. So just remains for me to say, Henry Okozie of Fortress Wealth Management, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Michael. It's been a pleasure.
Fortress Wealth Partnership Limited is an appointed representative of and represents only St. James's Place Wealth Management PLC, which is authorized and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority for the purpose of advising solely on the group's wealth management products and services, more details of which are set out on the group's website, www.sjp.co.uk/products. The St. James's Place Partnership and the titles Partner and Partner Practice are marketing terms used to describe St. James's Place representatives. The value of an investment with St. James's Place will be directly linked to the performance of the funds you select, and the value can therefore go down as well as up. You may get back less than you invested. An investment in equities does not provide the security of capital associated with a deposit account with a bank or building society. The levels and bases of taxation and release from taxation can change at any time. The value of any tax relief depends on individual circumstances. Exit strategies may include the referral to a service that is separate and distinct to those offered by St. James's. Place. Do you want to grow your Amazon business bigger or faster? I bet you do. If so, a free audit of your Amazon business can help you see and avoid threats and find some golden missed opportunities. Generally, I charge at least $150 an hour these days for my time, but this is free. You can be a reseller or a brand owner. All I ask is that you're doing at least a few thousand dollars a month in sales. If you are, just go to myamazonaudit.com, scroll down, click on Amazon Audit and book in a time, and we'll see each other on a Zoom call. That's myamazonaudit.com. Thank you very much for listening, and I hope to see you on a call soon. Thanks for listening to the 10K Collective podcast for 6- and 7-figure Amazon sellers. I really hope you found the show helpful to you. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do leave us a quick star rating. It will take you all of 30 seconds to do it, but it does mean we can be found by and help many more e-commerce business builders. I wish you fast and profitable scaling, and I hope you enjoy the process of building your 7-figure Amazon business. Thanks very much for listening.